This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. Long before the typical woman in the United States gained the vote, at a time when women in general were blocked from professional and managerial careers, members of Roman Catholic women's religious orders assumed leadership roles building and managing hospitals, schools, colleges, and social service organizations that serve literally millions. With the explosion of opportunities for all American women and the changes in the Catholic Church over the last 50 years, who's joining women's religious orders in 2018? To explore that, we are joined today by Sister Tracy Kemmy, a Sister of Charity of Cincinnati. While in formation, she kept a blog that she titled Diary of a Sister in Training. She will soon begin work on her master's in pastoral studies at the Catholic Theological Union in Chicago. We're also joined by the Assistant Director of Ministry and Service at Chaminade Julianne High School in Dayton and the Vocations Director for the Marianist Sisters, Sister Nicole Trahan. And finally, the Director of Mission Advancement for the Sisters of Notre Dame in Northern Kentucky, Jody Elfrich. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Cincinnati Edition. And Sister Tracy, what point did you begin to seriously consider joining a religious order? And maybe the Sisters of Charity were the one that you had focused on initially. I don't know. But at what point in your life was this sort of a really active question?
So I never thought about being a sister until after college. It was maybe the last thing on my mind of something that I would do as a young adult woman. I didn't know any young sisters at the time. I didn't know people still did this. So it wasn't a viable option that I was considering necessarily for my life. So when I was in Ecuador as a post-grad volunteer, I lived for 2 years outside of Guayaquil, living in some of the most impoverished communities I'd ever seen. And it was really having that encounter with the quote-unquote poor, with people that our world society has kind of stepped on, that I sort of felt this call to do something with my life to help relieve the suffering that I had encountered. And it was in those prayer experiences and encounters with my Ecuadorian neighbors that I started to feel God was kind of tapping me on the shoulder, like, maybe you should look at this. So it took several years to get to a place where I was excited about it. At first, it was a scary thing because I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. But through the help of mentors and being able to live with a community of sisters on the U.S.-Mexico border, I started to see that sisters are people just like me and that I could be one as well. So,
okay. Yeah. And Sister Nicole, same question for you with maybe a twist. Why the Marianists? What drew you to the Marianists? But sort of what drew you to religious life, basically?
Kind of like Tracy, I never thought about religious life at all growing up. I had sisters in school as teachers sometimes, but I didn't see myself as anything like them. They were so different than me, and I didn't really understand, like Tracy said, about people being just people and not that much different, but I just didn't know. It wasn't until I was out of college for several years that I started thinking about the possibility of religious life. But I didn't think about religious life until after I met the Marianist. I met the Marianist first and fell in love with the mission and the spirit and the charism and the work and just the people that they are. And I thought, wow, I want to be a part of that. I want to help spread that. But I still wasn't sold on being a sister. But I was connected with them and became a very committed lay Marianist. And when I started praying about the possibility of religious life, it didn't make sense to me to look at another congregation because I had already fallen in love with and become a Marianist. So I thought, well, then I'll be a Marianist sister.
So the order was one way of living out a commitment, really, you had already made.
Right.
In some ways.
Yeah.
Jody, just because it may not be totally clear, you are not a vowed sister. You are a layperson working for the Sisters of Notre Dame in Northern Kentucky, right?
That's correct.
So let's just so that people kind of can keep different perspectives straight here. What's the average age and educational background of the people who are entering the Sisters of Notre Dame at this point?
At this point, within the United States, so the Sisters of Notre Dame have four provinces throughout the nation. We're seeing young women who are entering after their college years, sometimes even after they've been in the workforce for maybe a decade, and are kind of getting that sense of, okay, this isn't exactly what I'm made to do, what I need to be doing, and they get that calling within. So we're seeing women in their 30s. There's a postulant, so which is the first stage of formation, who's just moved here to Covington, and she's in her late 30s. She's had a long-time career in finance, and she left it to become a Sister of Notre Dame.
And that's not that unusual, I suspect, for the other orders that are represented here. Is that right, in terms of when people are making these decisions?
That's true. Mm-hmm. Definitely in our community, we like people to have education, to have life experience, you know, to be able to really make a good, mature discernment that this is the life that they want to commit to. So in our formation program right now, we have people in their 20s up to their 50s all over the board.
And when you say formation, and I use that term in the introduction as well, but what's that mean? What's formation here?
Well, the time of formation is when someone first becomes a sister, decides to enter. There's a process before it is a permanent commitment. So it's a process of discernment, a process of learning about what's the life about, what is the congregation about, what is the spirit, the history of the congregation. So there's different stages of that before someone makes a permanent commitment. Because we want to make sure, like Tracy said, that people are making a mature decision and they know what they're saying yes to before they say yes. So the formation process varies depending on the congregation, but typically there's the first stage, postulancy or pre-novitiate or candidacy. People call it different things. That lasts 6 months to a year. It's kind of an orientation time, getting to know the sisters in the community and the way of life. And then there comes a time of novitiate, where someone becomes a novice for 2 years, and that's more intense study and prayer, coming to know oneself, coming to know the congregation. It's kind of a 2-year time of retreat away from the normalcy of life as they've known it, to make that transition. And then a person will profess vows for the first time, and that can last anywhere from 1 to 7 years. And that person lives the vows for that set amount of time and then can decide whether or not they want to make a permanent commitment. So that whole time is called formation.
You know, one of the things that I think is interesting with the Sisters of Charity, both the foundress, Elizabeth Seton, had been married, had a family, and the founder of the Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati, which is an offshoot, Sister Margaret George, she also had been married, and these were people who were making mature decisions. It sort of strikes me that possibly the old model that I would have grown up with was that people were sort of entering orders right after high school was the aberration rather than maybe the model that had historically been more common and also maybe more tested.
Yeah, if you look at the history of religious life, the big influx that happened last century was kind of out of the ordinary. And I think we have to trust God here, that God is the one who calls and God knows who is needed for the time. So in the middle of last century, we needed these numbers to start the hospital system, the school system in the United States. But traditionally in the history of religious life, it's been small groups of dedicated women making these decisions and being the leaven in society.
And I think we'll see that moving forward. I get asked frequently, why do you work with these sisters? Aren't they all dying out? And it kind of stilts me a little bit, but I am invigorated when I see these young sisters like you and know that it doesn't take large numbers to make a big difference. And I think moving forward, we're going to continue to see these small groups of very passionate women going out to the margins and just meeting the needs of the world. And it doesn't take thousands of people to do that. It can be these small numbers, and that can be the norm for religious life.
Amen. Mm-hmm. One, collaboration is key in this too. I mean, of course, we see ourselves as partners in the mission with so many different kinds of people. So in many ways, sisters are free to be able to serve in ways that others may not be, but we can be animators and partners, and even across congregations. You know, we talk a lot about the future of religious life. As congregations become smaller themselves, the bonds between congregations grow really strong. So Nicole and I have known each other, even though we're not part of the same congregation, through gatherings for younger mm-hmm. sisters. We're both part of an organization called Giving Voice, national organization for sisters under 50. So we have this national and even international network of sisters that have entered in the last years.
You know, one of the things, Sister Nicole, to ask you, how important is the whole living in community aspect of being in a religious order? Living in community, but maybe not living in those big convents that were built. I know the convent in Park Hills for the Notre Dames used to serve Mass there. I know the Sisters of Charity convent, very large. But how important is living in community part of this whole call?
I think it's essential. I think that it's community that gives a person the support that they need to be about the mission that they're about. It is in community where you pray and discern what God is calling you to, what God is calling the group to. It's where one gets their energy, I suppose, for the mission that they serve. Now, communities look different depending on the congregation, but in all congregations, community is essential. And you find, I think, that a lot of people who are looking at entering religious life now, younger people thinking about it, they're looking for that sense of community, that sense of support, you know, because people can do some of the same work that we do without being a religious sister, but they're looking for that place to come together, to pray, to support one another, to challenge one another, in order to go out and do that work.
Sister Tracy, what's the community you live in right now? What's it look like? And I know you're about to move and go to graduate school, but what's the community that you live in?
It's a great question, because I love talking about community for many of the reasons that Nicole shared. It's really what drew me to religious life, to be able to share life with other like-minded women. So I came together after First Vows with three other Sisters of Charity. We wanted to create a community of hospitality and welcome and discernment. So for young women who might be asking the question, could I be a sister? Could I see myself doing this? To really give them the chance to check it out, no strings attached, to live with us. So we have that space in East Price Hill. We also wanted to be a space if people are in need of shelter, they could stay with us. So we've hosted refugees and immigrants several times at our home. And it was really important to be in East Price Hill. We talk about the vocation of location, to try to be in the places that we believe that Jesus himself would be. So places of need, places where there's strife. So I currently minister at Holy Family Parish for just a few more days, live right down the street from that. So a lot of the Guatemalan immigrants that I'm working with are our neighbors. So we make our community life right there in the heart of East Price Hill.
And if I'm not mistaken, you're bilingual, so
yes,
you can serve that purpose of helping people cross that little boundary that's there in terms of language.
Yes, joy.
Sister Nicole, what sort of community do you live in?
I live in a community that serves many roles or many purposes. We're four of us total in the house. We are a formation house, so we have two young women who are in the formation process. Mm-hmm. And we also serve as a house of hospitality and discernment for young women who are considering the possibility of religious life. They can live with us, like at Tracy's community, for a week or 2 weeks, 6 months or a year, just depending on how much time they need to really experience the life and to discern well. And so we live in an area very close to the University of Dayton, because we do a lot with students from the university. So we'll have students walking over to the house to pray with us, to share a meal with us, just to share in the Marianist spirit and to learn about it.
Okay. In the process of people joining a religious order, living in community, there's also the question of, you know, what are you going to do? What's the work you're going to do? Now, in the past, some orders were really dedicated to a particular work. They were teaching orders or they were hospital orders. They had – and that's really broken down a lot. I mean, there's a lot of – and Jody, with the Sisters of Notre Dame, mm-hmm. sort of what's the variety of people of work that people are choosing to do at this point in time?
Yeah. I would say that the Sisters of Notre Dame, they're very nimble and agile. You might not expect that from an organization within the church, but the sisters have adapted to the needs of the community. We have sisters who are serving at the Notre Dame Urban Education Center in the urban core of Covington. So we might not be running entire schools now, but are there to provide academic support for children, but also for families. Even at the Urban Education Center, we provide programming for parents about, you know, home finance and keeping a good credit score and eating healthy, things like this, just these day-to-day things that might not seem like you're out saving the world, but it's a small form of ministry. And that's what I think the Sisters of Notre Dame are all about. We have sisters who are supporting migrants. There's a sister, she's originally from Sweden. She's been living in the United States, but recently she's gone back to Stockholm to serve some of the asylum seekers who are coming into Stockholm. And she'll return in the next couple of years, but she just felt a call to go and serve that community because it's a pressing need, especially in Stockholm at the moment. There are sisters who are serving in more administrative roles, but at organizations that are serving the community. Sisters serving down at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead, Kentucky, which serves some of the poorest counties of Kentucky and the nation. Healthcare, education, and kind of just social outreach is a focus for the SNDs.
I think that's something that's surprising to people. When, at least for me, when I started looking into religious life, I was shocked at the variety of careers that people have. So the community that I first lived with, there was a doctor, a nurse, and a massage therapist. Now I live with a medical ethicist, a justice activist who was a teacher for many, many years, and a dietitian. So, you know, we kind of feel like God calls you with the gifts that you have, and you can bring them to religious life and put them at the service of God's people. So it's an exciting time, you know.
And reading some of your diary of a sister in training, you may look back on that 30 years from now and wonder why you wrote some of this. But so you strike me as a bit of an activist. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you had lived in Ecuador. You've worked on the border between the United States and Mexico. How does that fit in to your role and your call as a Sister of Charity?
Well, I think it's, first of all, very rooted in the gospel. If we look at Jesus, who we follow, he was always closest to the people who were in need in society, the oppressed, the people who were left out. He stood with them and stood up for them and helped give them a voice. And I think that's been an essential part of the vocation of a sister for many, many years. So I feel like I try to embody that spirit. Our charism statement says that we pray to know the needs of our brothers and sisters and dare to risk a caring response. So there's, in our spirit of our congregation, there's that kind of spirit of pushing the envelope a little bit in the name of justice, gospel justice.
Okay. What about for these Marianist sisters? And I'm not sure we had Marianist brothers in this community at Purcell, at Covenant Catholic, but I'm not sure about, people may not be in the immediate Cincinnati area that familiar with Marianist sisters. What would you say about that same point and sort of range of work and activism?
Mm-hmm. We've never had a community of Marianist sisters in Cincinnati. We've been in Dayton for over 50 years. We are an international community, so we started in France, but we came over to the U.S. and settled in Texas first and then branched up to Ohio. And we are involved in a lot of different works. One of the things that's really important to us is what Mary said at the wedding feast of Cana to the servants. She told the servants at Cana, do whatever he tells you, telling the servants to do whatever Jesus tells them to do. And that is our motto. Whatever the needs are around us, whatever gifts we have, we try to match what those needs are. So we've never had, you know, a school here in the U.S. We've never had a hospital or anything like that. In fact, we're not really known for healthcare work, but we are known for education, for advocacy, sure. We have a sister who directs the Marianas Environmental Education Center, and she does a lot of work for helping people understand the needs of our environment and how to live the Pope's document, Laudato Si, and care for our common home. We have sisters who have volunteered or worked with helping non-English speakers learn English, refugees and migrants into mm-hmm. the area. And we do a lot in terms of helping people understand what the issues are.
Okay. We've got a caller who's called in, and I want to make sure that Jim has a chance to ask his question, and I think it's directed at you, Nicole. But Jim, what question do you have?
Yeah, for Sister Nicole. Hi, Nicole. This is Jim Vogt.
Jim Vogt.
Jim Vogt.
Yeah, we all know you. Okay.
Ben and I go way back. I think it might be helpful if you could talk about the pros and the cons of being part of what in this country is a very small religious congregation, your total numbers, and what kind of how is that unique and how do you feel about that?
Just to clarify, Jim Vogt and I were high school students together and friends forever. So, yes, and very involved in Marianas movement. Sister Nicole?
Okay, very good. Thank you, Jim, for that question. It's a great question. So I mentioned earlier that the Marianas sisters are international. So we have 300 and something sisters around the world. But here in the U.S., we are very small. And I think that there are some very positive things about that. Because we are so small, because we've never had big institutions in the U.S., there's a freedom that comes with that. There's a freedom of movement. There's a freedom to respond to needs without being encumbered by the needs of an institution. In some places, there are congregations that are having to make very tough decisions about their institutional works, the schools that they've run for years or the hospitals that they've run. And we haven't had to deal with those same issues, I suppose. So there's a freedom in that. I guess you could say it's the freedom of poverty, like not having something to cling to. And so you cling to God and move forward in that freedom. Now, I don't mean to say that there's no difficulties in that. Would we like to be larger sometimes? Yes, to have more people to share in the mission. But we do the mission. We follow God's call with the people that we have. And that has served us well.
Sister Tracy, you're part of a congregation, Sisters of Charity of Cincinnati, that had lots of institutions.
Yes.
So maybe a little bit different perspective on that same question?
Yeah, we have big questions that we're grappling with as a congregation. And thankfully, we had brilliant faith-filled women in the last century who kind of foresaw some of these big questions. So we've been making decisions all along to do what we need to do for the mission to go forward. And it's really humbling to be part of such a long line of Sisters of Charity. I was just out in our cemetery this morning after Mass praying, looking around at all of the headstones of all these amazing women. And so we're just doing the best that we can to carry on this beautiful legacy that's been gifted to us in the time that we're called.
Okay. Well, I want to thank all three of you, Sister Tracy Kemi, Sister Nicole Trahan, and Jody McElfrich for being with us today. Good luck in graduate school.
Thank you.
Good luck going back to school.
Thank you.
And good luck raising money. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.